Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sidney Wildsmith.
For a long time, it has seemed that Americans are becoming alarmed at the ways in which our country is losing its way in the world and losing the battle to protect and preserve the great land legacy that defines us. The Campaign for America's Future convened this week, and you're about to hear two of the strongest advocates for planet Earth. It's Robert Redford and Leo Gerard. When your voice of the Earth continues, here on the Wildside News. There's a real struggle going on between an administration that seems determined to wrestle control of our lands away from the public and transfer such to the major corporations. It's really no secret at all that corporate influence runs the current policy. We witness such each day. Battles over whether or not rural communities in Wyoming or Utah will see their ways of life forever altered with massive oil and gas leases. The same is true with the issue of Anwar, a public land held sacred for posterity as a refuge of wildness. But the definition of posterity is suffering from a rampant short-sightedness. This week, an admittedly progressive alliance gathered as the Campaign for America's Future. On the opening day, the Apollo Alliance was given tribute as a strategy to once and for all forge a working sustainable path to self-sufficiency. There were many exceptional voices that stood up on behalf of our future, and today we bring you two who cut through a lot of the bull to tell it like it is. We begin with excerpts from Robert Redford, who addressed the crowd.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's give it up for Robert Redford.
Thank you. When you really understand this planet and its evolution and how it got here, it's just a miracle. Despite all the advances in science, there's been no indication that there's anything resembling Earth at all. And how we got here and how we stay here is nothing short of a miracle. And when you know that, you have to ask yourself, how can we not care for what we've got? I like to think that how about the planet we should have that's here right now? And what are we going to do about it when you have such a lack of leadership, which we hear a lot of talk about? There's an awful lot of talk about lack of leadership and at the top. It was pretty clear why we don't have that leadership. There's a stranglehold on both houses, probably Supreme Court to boot, and the bully pulpit. What are you going to do? Well, where's it going to come from? It can only come from one place, and that's from the bottom up. And in a way, I've always appreciated that may be, considering the compromises of the political system, that may be the best way. It's the American way to have grassroots coming up. For me, to give you a little bit of history on my account, I've been at this a pretty long time, and how I came to it was, I grew up in Los Angeles, at a time when Los Angeles hadn't hit the high development phase, and I knew a city, even though I came from a lower working class family, we didn't have much, I knew a city that was pretty great in terms of the natural environment that was still available to it. You had the ocean on one side, you had the Sierras on the other, and so I took full advantage of that as a kid. And I think that's where I got my appreciation of nature and the environment. It was available to me, but once I got into it, I really appreciated it. And when things started to slide, when development went out of control and when no land use policies were put into action anywhere, you could see the consequences that there was a slight erosion, just chipping away at this beautiful, great asset. And then it went further and further until it was crawling all through the West, and now it's pervasive all through the country. So we talk about that aspect of it. I got involved. Prague, 1969, I became politically active in the environment. In 1973, I was at a conference in Vail, Colorado as a guest, and in that conference they were talking about energy. And some guys, some experts were there, and they put up a chart, and it said on the one side, this is a list of non-renewable energy sources. And all of our economic development, all of our industry, our lifestyle, everything seemed to be wrapped up in that category. And our energy use. I thought, wait a minute. And then over here was another chart that said these are renewable energy sources, and these are the alternatives for developing energy out of the renewable sources. And to me, it was like a no-brainer. And this was 1973. I thought, well, what are we doing here? This is crazy. Why are we not hearing more about this? Why are we not going in that direction? So I decided that I would take it on myself to investigate that category and do whatever I could, raise whatever voice I could to help anybody out there that was moving in that direction. So 30 years later, there was a lot of battles, and I got kicked around pretty good. And here we are. It's many, many years later. And only now are things beginning to come together in such a way where you've got a perfect storm of opportunity. The group of leaders here today that are taking responsibility in their own hands in lieu of it coming from the top, from the people we pay to lead us and who are not, that's really why I'm here. And so I think you start by identifying, when you know there's solutions out there and that it's not going to come, it's a failed leadership in that regard, and probably many others too, but I mean, what are the solutions? And you say, well first of all, forget Bush, forget this administration, they're not going to change, you can't reason with a stone, and so It's really pretty much a waste of our time to go up that hill without feeling like Sisyphus. So I said, forget it, and look to where the solutions are going to come. And what excites me, quite frankly, you've seen Al's film, there's a lot of doom and gloom in the message being put out there, because it has to be. We have to understand how bad it is. But there's also another side of the picture that I'm pretty well committing myself and my energies to, which is also an Al's film, which is where we can go that creates some optimism, and where we can grow, where we can go where we can get back in touch with thinking big again and dreaming again and thinking about hope again, which has been so savaged in the last few years politically. We can have it back again, and I think that it is a time for optimism, because it's a time for opportunity. And when you draw the picture, which is so painfully clear, that we're tied to non-renewable energy sources, that are tied to governments that are unstable, led by despots, it's pretty clear that we're in need of a solution. And what is it? Well, it's right here at home, and the idea of the new technologies that are available, which themselves will create new jobs, but the new technologies will create new products that will also create new jobs. And the best of it, as far as I'm concerned, is that those jobs are going to stay home. They're going to stay in our community. And we won't get into that sad issue of outsourcing and being dependent on other countries for our own sustainability. To me, that's very American, and that's to me much more American than the way we're behaving right now at the top. So the idea is now where, who and what, and that's where you all come in. As far as I'm concerned, I've been here for a while. I've done what I can and will continue to do what I can. But the future is going to be yours and your children. They're my children. I already have my children. I have grandchildren. I got to think about them. It's your future in your hands to act on, and I know you're going to do it because you have the power. And you're going to be the catalyst to force political change from the leaders that are elected to lead us. And so I really am here to applaud you, and also the fact that Apollo has done something pretty amazing that is also very American, very grassroots, which is taking putting together a coalition of across-the-board entities that represent just about all of American industrial society. You've got religious leaders, you've got labor, you've got Leo, you've got labor, you've got military leaders, you've got environmental leaders, you've got farmers. I mean, you put them all together, and there you have the real American voice speaking. So to me, I find that very optimistic and just downright exciting. The other reason I'm here today support of the Apollo group and knowing that that's going to be a handy solution that's right here right now is to present an award to a man who represents one segment of that group I just spoke about, and that's Leo Girard. And I'd like to say that Leo has been out there for a long, long time doing something pretty terrific, and I'm happy to describe him to you. As a charter board member of the Apollo Alliance, he has worked to rally more than a dozen other labor union partners in the pursuit of Apollo's goal of creating good jobs through development of new technologies, policies and practices in pursuit of energy independence. As president of the United Steelworkers, he has reasserted his union's decades-old commitment to sustainable growth by winning passage of Securing Our Children's World as the official policy of his union. He is himself a man of boundless energy in pressing for the activism essential for building a more progressive society and a cleaner and more humane world. So in honor of his outstanding leadership in the fight for good jobs and clean energy, I'd like to present Leo Girard with the Apollo Alliance's first Right Stuff Award. Leo.
I want to thank Bob and Jerome and Larry for the kind words and this tremendous honor. Our union held its first conference on what was then called pollution abatement in the middle 60s. Our union led the fight to reduce coke oven emissions in the middle 60s. Our union led the fight to remove lead from the workplaces and fight for a lead standard in the 60s and 70s. We fought for a benzene standard. We joined with Dr. Silikoff to fight for the banning of asbestos and the elimination from our workplaces. With all due respect, we did this before we understood that it was going to be called an environmental fight. We called it an anti-pollution fight. We fought to remove acid rain in my hometown, which was the largest single polluter in North America. And we did that under the leadership of many presidents. But one of the most powerful moments in my time in leadership in our union came in 1990. In 1990, at an international convention held in Toronto, our then president, our future president, our legislative director, and our director of the occupational health and safety and environment of our union created a document called Our Children's World. And in that document in 1990, amongst many things that we said, a cornerstone of that document was that the issue of global warming was the defining issue of that decade and was the most serious environmental crisis facing the world today, and that our union was committed to doing something about it. On March 1st of this year, our International Executive Board unanimously endorsed a document called Securing Our Children's World, where we lay out the significant environmental challenges that face our society. We take on the challenges that few will be willing to take on. We make it clear that we're not in favor of drilling in Anwar, because the reality is there's less oil in Anwar than we would consume in a year. What the right wing wants is to be able to drill in Anwar so that they can prove they can drill any damn place they want, and we have to stop them. We have to make the case that we can have energy independence. We can have the case that we can reduce our dependence on foreign oil. We need to make the case that we need a diversified energy supply. We need to make the case that, quite frankly, if we just retrofitted our schools to current science, we could save more energy than we'd get out of Anwar. And our kids would breathe better air. Our trade with China has reached $200+ billion deficits. Our global trade deficit is excess of $700 billion. This year might hit $1 trillion. How many people know in the public that on a small, smog-filled day in L.A., upwards of 25% of the particulates have blown over from China, where they have no environmental standards, and we continue to sign rotten trade deals and send our jobs? We should export technology for renewable energy, not to export good industrial family-supporting jobs. Someone said to me, "Why did you join the Apollo Alliance?" I said, we didn't just join, we helped found it. And we did that because it's a natural extension of our fundamental belief. It's not a choice between good jobs and a clean environment. That's a false choice. We will either have both, or our kids and grandkids will have neither, and I want my kids and grandkids to have at least as good a shot in life as I had. I'm happy to also tell you that last week in Washington at the National Press Club, on behalf of the 850,000 members of the Steelworkers Union and the close to 800,000 members of Sierra Club, the Sierra Club and the United Steelworkers of America formally signed creating the Blue-Green Alliance. I'm not afraid to tell you, I'm going to catch some shit from some of our members. But I always remind them, shit's easier to throw than it is to catch. I can't completely leave my plant vernacular behind. But the reality is, in some segments of our newly merged union, the boss has been playing the card. Just like the boss does in organizing drives or in collective bargaining, when you want decent health care or decent pensions, they play the same card. If you want a good pension, we won't have as many jobs. If you want a clean environment, we can't have as many jobs. They're both a lie. They're both a lie. There's no reason why good jobs and a clean environment can't be available to all of us, as well as good pensions and good health care. This is the richest country on earth. There is no reason, economic or otherwise, why we can't have good jobs and a clean environment and sound policy for health care and pensions. The reality is that a country that's only had a democracy, only returned to democracy for a very few years, is on the verge of having energy independence. That country is Brazil. And I'm happy to tell you that the president of Brazil is a former metal worker union president who went to jail for the right to have a union. He's going to be... Lula da Silva is going to be the first president of a major democracy that leads his nation to independence, energy independence. And the question is simple in my mind. If Brazil can be the first country to have energy independence, why can't we be second? And why? What is stopping us? Let me close. There are those in the public who think we should sit back and accept the rhetoric of the rich and the powerful and the bosses that tell us you can't have a union, or you can't have health care, or you can't have pensions, or you can't have a clean environment. And I say to them, kiss Larry's ass.
To learn more about the Campaign for America's Future, visit ourfuture.org. Plenty of great ideas and voices and visions and hopes have been given to you on today's show. People are activating, they are uniting, and they are each doing the right thing. That is the mantra of the moment. Do the right thing. And continue doing the right thing until we meet again next Thursday or anytime on the archives. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios until we meet again when your voice of the earth returns here on the Wild Side News.